Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Sings, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and the AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of a British man pretending that this is an AEW's week in the Wembley show. Just, you know, 30 minutes of WWE as if, you know, everything's normal and it's all about them. I know. It's their time next week. Also, what a run we've had of August. Like, in terms of, like, personal freedom just to do things. Or wrestling, you know. Nowadays, in August feels like it's just a much bigger month. We've got SummerSlam, and then we've got the G1 Climax, then we've got AEW All In, and then it's straight into Bash and Burn In. It's like, Mike, there is a... It's just a straight stretch of stuff going on. But let's jump on over to WWE to get straight on into it. You know, you've got 30 minutes, you know, let's not pretend. It's AEW All In at Wembley Week, and I'm English, so therefore, you know, just pretend it's a normal week in WWE. For WWE, it's just an ordinary week, you know, just bubbling stuff. As I said last week, what do I call it this time? Where last week it was the bubbling build to Berlin. Well, this is the bubbling build to Berlin again. So what do I call the show this week? I had a bloodline to it. That's another B. The bloodline bubbling build to Berlin. So let's jump on over to Orlando, Florida. For Smackers.
Oh, wait a second! Jacob Fatu! Jacob Fatu is here and just took down Roman Reigns!
Roman Reigns and the Bloodline fight once again throughout the show, getting Tama Tonga and Solo backstage with the Ulafala, positioning that as the thing that makes you the person who is the leader. This happens quite a lot in wrestling, where someone gets established as being the kind of symbol of the person being the leader. Quite often in wrestling logic, if someone then steals it, then that means that the reign is contested, rather than the fact that there was a whole anointing process of everybody acknowledging Roman Reigns as the tribal chief. So it's not just about having the Ulafalas also being acknowledged too. But, you know, although there's a wrestling part of your brain, it's like, yeah, but this is like the visual representation of it. Therefore, quite literally, if someone else nicks it, that means they get the power, right? I mean, sure. Sure, whatever. Sure. You get watching House of the Dragon, that's literally what it's all about. It's not about, you know, seizing the actual power. It's the hat. They want the crown. They want the shiny hat. That's all it's about, really. Yes, we got those segments during the back. No Jacob Fatu. He's not been seen since SummerSlam. No Tangaloa. He's not been seen since last week. And the main event angle, Solo out in his gear to directly challenge the original Tribal Chief, if you wondered what OTC meant. If you haven't figured it out by this stage. This did come with a nice automatic crowd swing. They didn't really lift up their hands for the one in acknowledgement. Whilst beforehand they were so into doing it with Roman Reigns that even though they were booing so low, you'd still get quite a few people in the crowd raising their ones. Now there was a very automatic thing. They practically refused to do so, aside for Roman Reigns doing it. They didn't feel like something that had been conditioned. Like they didn't do something to try and stop you putting up your wands for solo. That was just automatic from the fans, which is proving just their investment in all of this. So I guess that's credit to WWE and to just you got a live crowd who are actually invested in this shit. Repeating last week with Roman coming out to face the Bloodline with a beating in mind, that's when they raise their wands. Roman Reigns comes out, everybody's up with their wands. Fingers to the sky. FU Solo drowning out Welcome Back. Because, like, oh, again, you've got the conditioned chant of the automatic response that any bloke would get coming back. You get the Welcome Back chant. But the proof that they are invested in this, that's the difference here. The FU Solo chants, they far outweighed the Welcome Back chants. But because it had a swear in it, it's like, oh, come on, American TV. Well, I don't know if it's American TV or it's just WWE production, because you don't get this in AEW. It's obviously trying to get to a adult audience, so it's not quite the same. With the crowd chanting FU Solo, that then meant that the production, instead of trying to cut the sound out every time there was a swear, production then piped in PG audio ahead of the two delivering their lamps. It's like, oh, WWE production is just weird sometimes. If you ever wonder why there's that talk of stuff being piped in or not in terms of reactions, it's because they are legit piping in stuff. This time it was to cover up the fact there was a really loud chant with a big swear in it, so they just piped through in PG audio, just generic cheers or whatever. It means you're piping in audio, you're altering what the actual live audience is doing. Therefore, every other part of your audio then gets questioned of, well, what's real and what's not? It's one of my biggest critiques of, like, you watch something like America's Got Talent and the live crowd might as well not even be there because everything is altered to that point. It's one of the things I didn't like when they brought World of Sport back to ITV. That was another one, which is very highly edited. When I say production up the wazoo, I don't mean the visual production that you get over with WWE and with AEW, with the camera work and the lighting, da da da. I meant more editing, like over-editing, to the point where there might as well have not even been a live crowd. You might as well have done it COVID style and just piped it in, just edited it in. It feels like a very, like, 90s way of doing it. I say that as somebody who attended a Robot Wars taping. This is a tangent. Tangent of a half. But it's related to the production stuff. So I went to a Robot Wars taping when I was in primary school. For the Americans, I would have been about, 9 or 10? And we went to a live recording of it, and Craig Charles comes out. I'm not going to translate Craig Charles to Americans. Craig Charles comes out, and he does his little talk to the crowd or whatever, and then he pisses off, never to be seen again for the rest of the recording. He maybe conducted these interviews or whatever, but they're not audible to the live crowd and stuff. And then somebody else comes out, and they get the crowd to do their cheers, and that's what's used for the panning shots of the crowd going across. And then you watch the robot fights, and obviously because it's kids, you have to interject that with the interactive stuff, so the random person coming out getting the crowds to cheer, like, hey. But they were basically spliced the fights with those random shots from the crowd. And then that's my first experience of, I was like, oh, I thought Craig Charles would come out in between the matches and do his bits like he does on TV show. Nah, he's ain't got time for that shit. He's Craig bloody Charles. He's gonna deliver all of his lines for the entire episode, then leave. That's him done. He's not speaking to the crowd again. To you pause. Like, really? But that was an example of my first exposure to realising, oh, this is just how produced something actually is. When I say to a point where the crowd might as well have not been there, they're literally just used for the visual of the crowd to be shown and cheering, and then any sound is just put over it or whatever. That's how ITV did their World of Sports show with their sound editing and their stuff. It's just like, it's not for me. It's really not for me. I think of that when I watch WWE, where they pipe in a sound. Where I don't think for me it ever feels that bad, but for me it feels like that overproduction. If you're going to put over your own sound, then what's the point of the live audience? That became a real problem in the Kevin Dunn production sometimes, especially as we're coming out of COVID and a lot of habits have been formed in how to produce the show during COVID, and piping in crowd noises kind of stayed for a little bit afterwards. Like, no, you don't need to do this. You really don't need to do this. And AEW is like a breath of fresh air in that regard. Just doesn't do it. Just don't do that stuff. Because it really does weigh it down. Anyway, that was the tangent. My point being, the FU Solo chance really gave this whole moment a unique feel, and then it's just kind of taken away. It does, like, the crowd and the atmosphere that the Florida crowd were bringing. That's taken away when you put in just the piped in audio. But it also then gets your viewers questioning what is and isn't real. Well, what is a piped in response? What isn't a piped in response? When you know they are piping in responses. At least this one was for a reason which feels very clear. If at least this one, they're covering up theirs. They can't have the swears. And for me, I think if I've got a choice between you cutting off the sound every time there's a swear, or if the choice is to pipe in audio, I mean, preferably just leave it. Don't do anything. That'd be my preferred option. But if you've got to, if you've got some idiot sponsor, some idiot advertiser, or the network's saying we can't have the swears, you're advertising to kids or whatever. If I've got to choose one of them, I guess the piped in audio, it's better than the sound cutting out just because you really feel that each time it cuts out. It's way more taking you out of it in terms of investment. Anyway, to the segment itself, a nice brawl started out with Roman and Solo fighting uninterrupted in the middle of the ring to start with, really like that, until Reigns knocked the wannabe chief down, and then of course Tama Tonga jumps on in. Tama Tonga though taken care of too by the tribal chief, somebody for Roman to beat up. Sokoa back into the ring to give the crowd what they want in seeing him eat a spear. The whole crowd stood on their feet as Roman slowly reclaimed the Ulafala and basked momentarily in the adoration of the crowd. This is his entire arc coming full circle. Until Jacob Fatu is the difference maker once again. His foot in... I didn't mean to say it like this. His foot in a boot, but his charges in fire. Instead of Roman reclaiming what's his, the show ends in a 3-on-1 beating, including the nice visual of the 3-man powerbomb being used as him as he sent through the announce table. Tama snatching the Ulafala back and giving it to Solo once again. So even though Roman Reigns went through all of that ordeal to be properly acknowledged as the tribal chief, even though Solo's just nicking it, but in his own lives to acknowledge him, commentary is kind of treating it like whoever holds that, holds the crown, holds the power. It's essentially how the Ulafala is being used. So sure, yeah, translating it to a white audience. Whatever. However, because we went through all that time of Roman not only getting the Ulafala, but also getting the acknowledgement as well, that added to the power of the Ulafala, or added to what it meant, what it represented, rather than it being the thing that gives you the power. He got given that and got acknowledged. That's like two separate things. We do kind of link to each other. Yeah, but now it's just the prop. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that continued to bubble. They basically repeated it last week, but now he brought in Jacob Fatu to continue to look like a beast against Roman Reigns. I like Jacob Fatu, he's the difference maker once again, now being brought in to face the big dog in Roman. I'm more excited about Fatu versus Roman than I am about Solo versus Roman. I think I said that before. Roman versus Jacob Fatu, and like the build up to his match with Solo sounds like exciting, but I just don't care about Roman versus Solo, which feels weird. The crowds are so invested. It's clearly that's not the case for everybody, what I'm just saying. Anyway, let's go through the rest of SmackDown. Kevin Owens versus Grayson Waller. Waller and Theory chatting shit backstage early in the show. KO ribbing the Aussie, like, yeah, I'm such a loser. Let's go in the ring and show them how much of a loser I am. Yeah, great idea. Using the match to show that KO's had a little fuel added to the fire after last week. Waller's dive through the ropes met with a stunner. The crowd all rising up in support as the Canadian amped himself up for the pop-up powerbomb. You want the old KO? Setting up to powerbomb the Aussie onto the apron. But Theory making the save, the 2-on-1 bringing out Cody for the big pop with a steel chairs, making sure to get a shot of Owens standing behind with Cody Rhodes in the foreground, showing Owens briefly thinking about swinging that chair before very quickly throwing it down. He hasn't swung into the old Kevin Owens yet. There is that kind of tease of it happening, but he's not fully swung there yet. What we were teased his arc was going to be last week, this week was just, yep, that's what we're doing. And then next week's the go home. So it's very quick. It feels like, in terms of like, if you're going to do like character arcs for your characters, either they're really not going to do much at all with this, but you can just get excited about the match and it's a little B-show, pay-per-view, whatever. It's not going to main event because Gunter's going to main event. So you do this little feud or whatever. But I wouldn't mind this being like the start of a KO character arc. Quite often the world title is the end point, but in terms of Kevin Owens, this could easily be used into triggering him back into either like a heel or something, just a different kind of character. It doesn't have to be the heel, but he can just be a more vicious Kevin Owens. The old KO making his way back to the surface. Nia Jax's silly little champion's coronation. It opened the show. People all over Twitter hated this. Like, again, for me, wrestling's the best when it's a variety show. This was definitely variety. Definitely different. Very silly wrestling stuff. This is the type of stuff where when I see people arguing online about which is better, and I'm like, you do know this is what we're arguing over, right? this bullshit. this silly nonsense. It's what you're getting so heated over. You're getting so emotional. And then, I hate AEW. I hate WWE. This is the bollocks that's being put on the telly. It's like, really? You're getting that emotional over this? Miss Money in the Bank, Tiffy Stratton, with the girliest of decorations. The new champion carried out on a white and gold throne, still wearing the crown. It's like, we didn't get King Gunter, but we are getting Queen Nia. Old habits die hard. Wrestling being very silly. we are also doing this within a whole Queen Nia Jax thing. She won Queen of the Ring, so she literally starts acting like a queen and in regal fashion with a crown. It's weird though, because Nia Jax feels like the kind of performer where she's just naturally cheesy enough to pull it off. It doesn't feel like a swing where you're waiting for them to get rid of it so you can properly enjoy them. It's like, no, this is kind of the bar of silliness, which feels like it fits Nia Jax. Telling the crowd she wants everyone in WWE to bow down, so generic queen stuff. However, using Stratton there, because she turns to Stratton to tease what will tear the duo apart. Because, of course, like, Tiffany Stratton's getting up close to Nia Jax, but at the end of the day, Nia Jax is looking down on everybody, and that includes Tiffany Stratton. And they know that Stratton's a threat because she's got the Money Back briefcase. Like, why would she not be paranoid about that? Pretty Deadly with the silliest little musical number, which gives Mia Yim the opening to slide on in with a kendo stick and start swinging. It's like, no, I don't feel bad about the musical number. It was nonsense, and sometimes I enjoy nonsense. I'm English. Of course, I sometimes enjoy whimsy. Like, why is that surprising? Honestly, like, with Mia Yim jumping in with that kendo stick, that's a great first opponent for Nia. Like, not one you can ever believe will win, but one that works in elevating and establishing both. Mia Yim has put in such great showings over the past few months and has started to be rewarded for it, so you can use this to elevate her up into like a more established character. And Nia needs someone who's going to beat where the crowd... She needs someone to beat as her first opponent to establish her. And this kind of works in that even though you don't believe Mia Yim's going to win, you can believe that this will elevate Mia. And make you care more when it turns into Tiffy Stratton versus Mia. Who the winner for that could be is just a little bit more open, because WWE just, for some reason, their relationship with Money in the Bank winners is that they must lose. Which I don't understand, because that means they haven't got any momentum. That means your fans aren't clamouring to watch them become champion, because you're taking taking their momentum away. Because the one thing they will hold on to is that they will get the moment and that'll be enough. Look what you did with Dolph Ziggler, where you heated him up first, then you cashed it in. That became the biggest one. Why have you not repeated that? That's the craziest thing to me. It's heralded as one of the greatest reactions in WWE. And I just sit here being like, but you've never tried to replicate the build part behind the Money Bank cash in. It's right there to look at. It's not even that difficult to analyse that why it was as hot as it was. Later in the show, Mia confirming to a Chelsea Green who was saying, oh yeah, we were totally going to help you or whatever, that there is going to be a title match against Nia. Green scuttling off into Aldis's office, which gave Nia the chance to get the final say, coming in from stage right and driving Yim's head into Nick Aldis's office door. Maybe it's like a quick little program, maybe even straight into Bailey coming back, because now title rematches are back. The title rematch clause is a thing again. Other notes, straight into the other notes. Mello, actually quite a few other notes just to get through. Mello and Andrade got another dance, flowing through the ad break and getting some of the crowd on their feet for the roll-up reversal ending win for Hayes. The Victor chatting shit as a bad winner, pushing El Idolo a little too far. I did see quite a few people really enjoyed this match. I watch it and go, this is the exact match that you rib on AEW for doing. And there's a point that I make where it doesn't matter what company's in, it's just an entertaining style. Stop being weird. I enjoyed both. Hometown Naomi got her match with Devonport. A stiff knee to the head sorted the win for the British Isles. Huzzah. Santos Escobar had dinner with the lads, promising to send the US champion packing. So LA Knight came out into the arena to a great pop. Also, it was all produced to make sure it captured the pop as well. We talk about just how over a wrestler a character can get, and it's so much of it is down to production. What they did for LA Knight's entrance here is to purposely make him feel like as huge a star as possible. Then you give that little moment of just the crowd quiet. Then the music hits and the crowd erupts. Then you pan to show LA Knight coming out. It makes him feel like an absolutely huge deal because he is the sole focus. And what I talked about last week, where there was like a match happening and they show somebody else in the crowd and the commentators talk about something else and then we return to the match. Like, the match isn't the main focus. Your attention's been taken elsewhere. And it's just a question of, well, why is that bad? Well, look at this LA Knight one here. All of the focus is on LA Knight. They are not directing your attention to inform you about anything else when he's coming out. That is how you produce somebody to make them feel like a star, make them feel important. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. They are telling you he's important. And then we get to the women's tag team titles. They are telling these women's tag team titles are not important. Using the same kind of production stuff that they used to tell you that LA Knight is important here. And this show then also tells us that the number one contenders tag team match isn't that important with its placement and its presentation. The slot right before the main event, where the flow has died down a little, just waiting for Solo and Roman. And cutting to Trick Williams in the crowd during DIY's entrance, so our focus is already being shifted about before the bell's even rung. Which then made it even weirder, where they just gave him loads of time to play out and really get the fans behind the match. Ciampa and Gargano had a respectful bout with the Street Profits, with the recent champions facing the fire of a team that hasn't held gold for quite some time. The Profits winning with an elevated rockbuster after being given the time to get the crowd properly invested and jumping, and after his commentary, just like, what a match, what an amazing match that was. Which again, just feels strange because the production told you as they were making their entrances that it wasn't that important. They're shifting your focus all over the place. It's not like there's a ringside celebrity there. It's like, no, they stayed on trick for quite some time to promote NXT. It doesn't feel like you're where the main focus should be, therefore it shouldn't be that important. Anyway, but yes, SmackDown was another bubbling build. A few repetitions of the previous week, and last week was telling us where they're going to go. This week was showing us where they're going. And maybe next week is telling us where they've gone. And then we leave Berlin. It's that simple three-week build, bish, bash, bosh. Three-week build, bish, bash, bosh to Berlin. Alliteration is very powerful in our country. Ted Lasso wasn't lying. He wasn't lying. Anyway, that is the end of Smackers, a perfectly mediocre bubbling build thing. But the Roman Reigns stuff is so white hot. And the fans are really into the character of Kevin Owens. It's a perfectly fine bubbler. And people really enjoyed Andrade versus Melo. Perfectly fine bubbling show. Anyway, let's jump on over to the red one. You know, I've got AEW to get excited about. So let's jump on over to Fort Lauderdale. I'm not American. I don't know these things. Fort Lauderdale, Florida, for Monday Night Raw. That's why I'm opening this Monday Night Raw bit talking about CM Punk. It's a strap match, baby. Like, oh, you mean like the MJF match? Like, no. Nope. This is the tap the corners, red light, green light game show version. Like, the most family-friendly way to do the stipulation. Like, I'm not lying when I say Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine opened my eyes to what a strap match could be after years of only having seen the WWE version. I didn't start watching until, like, late 2005, where there really isn't any competition. And I'd started to check out TNA maybe in, like, 2007. So I didn't really have any other place show me what a strap match could be. So I only knew the WWE version. Then things like the networks are coming about in like 2014. It's like, oh yeah, we're talking about it. It's that long. It's putting rib on somebody for getting fresh into wrestling and not knowing all this other outside stuff. Like, I personally, I've checked out stuff that excited me. I had a lot of WCW to watch on like in Daily Motion and all of that stuff. But I didn't properly go back to like the 80s wrestling that wasn't WWE until, I want to say, the network era where it started going up in higher quality onto the internet. And that's when I properly checked out Greg Valentine, Roddy Piper. And whoa, it changed my perspective on the strap match. It's fair to say. Realised what that could be. And then there's a reason that the MJF CM Punk match in AEW, why that strap match was lifting up the Greg Valentine and Roddy Piper match and taking so many notes from it. Because it is that legendary. It is that good. Like, especially if you've only seen like 90s Greg Valentine. Like, no. This is a great little insight into what the man was. This, I don't know. Quite genuinely, the first one that came to mind was the Shad versus JTG one, which is probably like going to be bottom tier. That was a tag team split up, which they had no idea what to do with. So sure, why not do a strap match? It's Extreme Rules pay-per-view. The first half of the CM Punk promo, talking about the love, bringing up Fan Fest that he did this weekend, and multiple times asking the question of, like, why is WWE on such a hot streak? Like, I'm sure having CM Punk be the one to specifically say this on the show, it's just a coincidence. Like, it happens to be him on the week of All In. You know, it just so happens to be a huge coincidence. The second half of the promo, about the hate, directing back to Drew and challenging the Scott to a strap match. Like, I'm sure folk will get excited about the strap whipping spots. I think so, and I've seen people like that already posting those responses on social media. But when the ending has got to inevitably be, like, at some point, it's going to have to fall to tapping each corner of the ring. Like, the heat isn't the focus anymore. The game is. We've got to fulfill the game of tapping each corner. You could try and build up. I've seen them try and build up the tension in different rivalries before, where you're tapping different corners and stuff. I swear JBL and Eddie Guerrero had a bloody one about 20 years ago, I want to say. But at some point, it boils down to walking round the corner and tapping each ring post. Can they complete the game? The thing I loved about the two draft matches I was just talking about, the fact that it's so bloody and it's such intensity throughout the entire match, and the endings just keep you focused on the characters and their hatred for each other. The fact that it's like a submission and they've got to pass out or give up or whatever just keeps the focus on the characters and their hatred that brought them to this kind of stipulation in the first place. Whilst in WWE, when I can't say that the strap match stipulation doesn't feel earned, because the strap match stipulation isn't the same. It's just almost a silly game where it's not a cage match where it feels like, or Hell in a Cell, it feels like you really build up to it. It actually be a big deal when you actually do it. it's got that game element to it, which kind of takes away a lot of the intensity. So CM Punk can't do the same kind of promises just because it's not going to be that kind of match. They're going to do leather whipping stuff. They can try and be a little bit more violent with it, but at the end of the day, they've got to tap the corners in succession and try and win the game. So yeah, the steel match in WWE doesn't quite excite me that much. It's the most boring version of the match. I don't think I've ever seen a good one. I've seen people try, but I don't think I've ever seen a good one. Because even though you can do a full intensity stuff before the tapping the ring post thing, it's when it boils down to the tapping the ring post bit. There's only so much you can do, and none of the focus is on the heated rivalry at that point. So yeah. Also, in terms of like typing it in on Google SEO stuff, you now type in CM Punk strap match, the AEW one's not going to come up. So, you know, there's other reasons to be doing it. Drew McIntyre out to accept, but he can't wait till next week. He wants a piece of CM Punk right now. In the prospect of a fight, Mr. Chicago Man even offering to give the strap to him if Drew hands over the bracelet in return. Drew says no. They're more secure on my wrist. Time for the tracker for this. So what's happened since SummerSlam. Bringing the tracker back, I did it last week. Week one, the pinfall loss didn't matter. Okay, cool. Week two, the bracelet didn't matter. Okay. Now we're on to week three, and the bracelet matters again. It's like, okay. So they tried to course correct last week, realised the course correct just wasn't needed at all, and just continued as is. That's kind of how I'm reading it. It's like, oh, okay. I feel like they've made two mistakes in a row, and then this week was just kind of as is, which makes the past 2 weeks even weirder. Even in retrospect, even stranger. They were trying to course correct when the course correct didn't even need to happen, so now it's kind of as is, folks. It's very strange. But yeah, when I say it didn't really feel like this match was deserving of a strap match, it's kind of because since SummerSlam they've also cooled it down, and the SummerSlam match itself also had its heat kind of directed away from CM Punk Drew McIntyre because of Seth Rollins' inclusion. Now you've had Seth Rollins taken away, so you are going to get just that hatred between CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. But the shows on Monday Night Raw since haven't shown that. They haven't shown that sheer hatred. They did a really good job in the build to SummerSlam, the build to getting to the match before Seth Rollins is injected. They did a really good job of showing that hatred between Drew and Punk. Like the whole Glasgow, the aftermath of the Glasgow show did a really, really good job of establishing all of that, really making the match announcement feel like a big deal. Since then, though, there's been so much focus redirection to other things. When, again, the past 2 weeks have just been course corrected, didn't need to happen. So this week was technically fine, but when you include it with the past 2 weeks, it just feels a bit weird. Because yeah, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to say, no, it's not the bracelet, it's what it represents is the importance to it. It's like, yeah, like, we get how mementos work. Like, it's not a crazy concept to us. And jumping on over to Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley, continuing to bubble their Judgment Day feud. During the show intro, Michael Cole, for the first time on WWE TV, called Priest and Ripley the Terror Twins. Nope. Not having that. Not having that. Said the name lots. They're definitely releasing a t-shirt soon. Again, after ribbing into the other company for being a t-shirt company. He's like, you're saying Terror Twins a lot on this show. Making sure that we definitely know that Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley are the Terror Twins. And they're saying it a lot. So that's officially their name. I can use this show to just be like, it's a bit cheesy. It's a little bit corny. A little bit corny. For a duo which should... does not have any of that kind of branding corniness around them. It just doesn't feel right for them at all. But, you know, WWE and their brand and what... It's one thing Dave Meltzer talked about, which I do agree with. WWE, it's not as bad as it was under Vince, but every character is closer to a brand than a real person. They're trying to get their brand across. The Triple H era has done a really good job to actually make those characters feel like people with actual characteristics, which means you can actually do baddie versus baddie and goodie versus goodie matches, because they're more than just a generic bleh. They are actually formed characters now, which makes it feel weirder when they do a big brand thing, because it's formed characters and then you do the big brand thing on top of it. Like, it doesn't fit. It's almost like an old-worldy thing being done. But, you know, wrestling's inherently corny as well. Inherently strange like this. Then, during their little VTR play, they called themselves the Terror Twins. And, no, I don't like, no, it's not. Damian Priest versus Dominic Mysterio later in the show. Priest ready for the judgment trap. Even Finn himself just got clobbered like a goon. It's like, hey, maybe didn't need Finn to be jumping down for this one. It was my original thought. But they win out in the end. It's a weird one where your first impression in the segment is Finn just getting clobbered like he's the rest of them. But at the end of the segment, he's standing tall with the whole group. So it's almost like Finn himself isn't dangerous, but the group is dangerous with Finn at the helm together. It does somewhat diminish the entire group when the leader's just so easily knocked down. But the rest of the whole group together works. Technically, no issues with the match because, you know, there can't be no DQ or anything because none of them even hit Damian Priest. And then there's no running for Dom with Ripley on the other side. A straight headbutt from the Aussie into a hilarious straight fist from Damien. Ripley teasing riptiding Dom through the announce table, but lives the difference maker. Chair shot to Reyes back and laying in lampings as the Judgment Boys jumped Priest. That's what I'm calling him now. The crowd maybe a step ahead with loud yeet and we want Jay Chance. I assume the man was penciled in for the Bloodline versus Bloodline Autumn, but this segment did set up Ripley and Priest might need some allies. Like later in the show, he announced he's in the IC tournament that'll be starting up soon, so the man is busy. But, you know, he can always lose in that because of it. That's the fans reading in. They remembered the segments of Jey Uso talking. They're always very like available now, like lurking in the background and all that jazz. So, you know, that's set up the fact that Jey Uso would maybe help them out now. But yeah, this was a needed show. Just I think I talked about it last week. A needed moment for the Judgment Day to actually stand tall instead of just Damien Priest and Rey Ripley beating them up and they just escape. Like, no, this had them actually standing tall over them with them heroes all beaten up and laid out crumpled. It's a much needed visual. This is the thing you put in the promo. Even if finger clobbered at the start, I doubt most viewers are going to remember that or hold that sentiment at the end of the segment. So it did its job. Also, kudos. It just feels so weird to have a crowd that is so attentive to what they're watching with WWE. Like, sure, they've got their Pavlovian responses, but they are invested in the story. And that's what makes the responses stand out a bit more. It's kind of why I bring them up when they happen. Like, they are invested in the stories. It's what made the reaction to Rhea Ripley so strange last week, where they wattered her during her promo, but 5 seconds later showed just how invested they were when they started cheering for every single quip she was throwing at Liv Morgan. And that's like a little example, just that they've got all those conditioned responses where they don't even, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't even know why they're doing it. It's just what you do at a wrestling show without even thinking about it. However, they are super invested in these characters. And for me, that showed it. Like, on a dime, they switched from wanting her to cheering her loudly. Rey didn't do anything particular. She just did the normal promo. And she got both reactions within, like, 5 seconds of each other. Anyways, jumping over to the main event. Randy Pandya first opened the show with pointing to the crowd and smiles, because he's the good guy. Chats some generic shit before Gunter strode on out. Randy, sorry, Florida. that's the only note I've got there. It's like, about 3 minutes of, you know, just... just chatting shit, isn't he? Randy, the only thing I need you to do... like, oh snap. Is this entire segment going to be generic? Like, oh, come on, hit me up. Like, come on, I'm ready. In fact, everybody here... like, oh, here we go. Yeah, this is it. Say the line. Go on, Gunter. Take us home. To do right now is shut up. Yay, he did it. Oh, generic shit Randy stuff into the just most generic heel line you can give to someone coming out. I will say to Gunter, he split it up into three parts and he let, like, each gap really breathe as he was making his way down to the ring. I've kind of not really done it justice because I was like, well, script-wise, it is the generic line. You've had a generic promo stuff for hometown cheery things from Randy Orton. Gunter comes out, says the most generic line you can think of, but it's proof of a good actor turned shit into gold. He's taken the most generic line and the way he's delivered it feels wholly unique, even though what he has delivered is the only thing I need you to do. In fact, everybody here is to shut up. It's like, oh, come on. Like, you're lucky he gets a response. But he's good enough. He knows if you have like 20 second gaps between each bit, then you feel different. Gunter, though, doesn't need to do any beat to get the usual Pavlovian chants. Just by being foreign, he gets wattered and USA'd. The champion, the true hero, as he calls the crowd out for their three brain cells used to chant USA at him. Like, that's the best he can do to show some kind of support for this man. Ripping into them for doing a wholly unoriginal chant, which doesn't really relate to what they're talking about. And then also using it to direct attention to Randy Orton. Like, he's a pro, he knows what he's doing. But this is all a ruse to have Kaiser attack from behind. Orton putting up a fight, but the 2-on-1 left, chop blocked and lariated going, argh. Which took us into our main event, Randy Orton versus Ludwig Kaiser. Sometimes it's just nice to recognise that ring camp for main eventing Monday Night Raw. Like, the lads became huge stars. Good for them. I mean, he's the lad there to make Randy look good and take an RKO ahead of Berlin, but like, hey, a main event's a main event. Gunter stalking around ringside wearing the World Championship gold, directing Ludwig traffic like a manager, Kaiser sending us into the ad break with a charge around the ring into a dropkick to the steps, targeting Orton's left leg, leaving him hobbling as he backbody drops Ludwig onto the announce table over and over in a quartet. Vintage Orton reigning, the weak knee a spot for the quick flash. Sorry, Ludwig Kaiser. We've only got 2 minutes to get through the superplex, drape DDT, RKO and show closing stare down. Randy Orton shoving off Gunter and standing tall for the end of the match. As the show goes off the air. So yeah, when I say it was kind of generic night for the World Championship stuff, like got very generic promos, somewhat generically setting up a distraction for you to get somewhat injured for the main event. Then the main event itself is somewhat run of the mill. Really, to be fair, the highlight of the match was Kaiser doing the back drop, body drop first, and then later on in the match, Randy Orton just hits four of them back to back to him, with the last one having emphasis and oomph. It's like, that was nice. And then, of course, only 2 minutes to actually do the whole go home stuff. I was like, that's right, Kaiser, you're not able to hit the knee that much. He just has to do all of the vintage Orton spots. So yeah, technically somewhat of a generic night, but the actors involved are good enough to actually somewhat elevate the mediocre material. Actually, that's the time for Raw this week. I saw quite a few people really enjoying it. I just found it very mediocre. Maybe it's because my excitement-wise, I'm elsewhere. But I felt this is really it was fine. On to the other notes, and there's quite a few. The women's tag team segment, once again, right before the main event, in between two hot segments. Like, this is a way the show is telling you the division isn't that important. It's not just 1 week. This is now the second week in a row it's been slotted here on the show. None of this is on the performance. That's all production. Sheamus and Pete Dunne were in the now weekly format of banger first match. Dunne trapping Shamu's hand by slotting it into the turnbuckle pad. That was nice. Only for the Irishman to hook up and power it off and fly in with a bro kick. I really did like that spot. It looked great. But this actual match was a much needed showing for Peter. Letting the Bruiserweight actually, you know, bruiser. It felt like a big deal. New Day and Odyssey Jones faced the Final Testament, paired with a little locker room segment between Kofi and Woods, continuing to play Xavier as not being totally chill about Kingston bringing in Big Odyssey without asking him. Also miffed during the match about Kofi making the tag to Jones instead of him. I mean, it was the right call, as Jones won the match, though. So Woods is just like, we did win. So, yeah, it's still not sold on it. Ivy Nile got her first proper night as a part of American Made, immediately getting to face Maxxine Dupri, until the spooky lights went down. Nikki Cross taking out innocent Ivy as the three lads lamped down the American men amongst all the spooky flashy lights. Gable all alone in the ring for Uncle Howdy to Sister Abigail. Again, the spooky lads are incredibly over. The W crowds are really loving every single part of this. Bronson Reed got to break The Miz in a no DQ. Like, they've been booking the man as an unstoppable destroyer. The crowds are finally buying Bronson Reed as an act. So there's only one thing you can do, and there's no proven better way to cool your momentum than with a mid-card feud with The Miz that bubbles into a bash with Braun Strowman. yes, mediocrity, here we are. Here we are. For me, having Bronson Reed properly demolish Braun Strowman as well could help really give him that boost in momentum. It's just, after he takes out Seth Rollins, it's not the absolute flying of momentum to kind of go this way. Also, a tournament has been announced to find Bron Breakker a number one contender, which is what Jey Uso was talking about earlier in the show. So none of that stories are way more important than just putting people in matches, because, you're doing a tournament to crown a number one contender. What do you think that is? Let's put the competition first. Anyway, that was the end of the show. Yeah, I can see why a lot of people really enjoyed it. I just found it it's mediocre. It was fine. And Friday Night SmackDown was just a very easy to watch, but not important to watch, bubbling little show. So yeah, stuff continues to bubble to Berlin. Basically, it was the kind of week where I'm able to focus on getting excited for All In. So arguably WWE didn't do their job. So I've got through their stuff. I'm like, I'm just excited to watch AEW now. They've done nothing to quell my excitement for their competition. So they've got this week with Berlin. It'll be their time next week. There's their go home for Berlin. This show in 2 weeks, I'll be covering Berlin. Their moment is right around the corner. It's just, it's not about you now. It's not always about you. It's not always about you. So anyway, everybody, enjoy AEW Wembley. I know I am. I know people with the Social Suplex Network will be going live to the event. So if you see anybody, do say hello. I'm not there this year. I did go last year, but I'm not there this year. So I will be watching live from home. So anyway, I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never taken for granted. I'll see you next week to talk about the Go Home for Berlin shows. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.